That's right. That's right. That's right. Oh. You are the government. You are Nailed the government. It. Thank you.
10 out of 10. If I was a like Olympic judge, I'd hold up a 10.
Yeah, love it.
On theme for our day, dear listeners, as we will be talking about kicking off more officially the election season that we find ourselves in. But welcome. Let's get it.
Everybody's so excited.
We're so excited for the rematch. Can't wait. Woo! Can't you hear the excitement? Let's get it, listeners. Episode 203 of AmeriPodcast being filmed at, wow, just turned 6 p.m. Exactly. Mountain Mean Time on March 14th. Hey, happy Pi Day. Yeah, happy Pi Day.
Yeah,
that's right.
Pi Day.
Does anyone ever get really granular with that? Like, it's like, what's the actual? It's like 3.145. Like the, you know,
1597.
I mean, we missed that. But can you get granular into like the time of the? You know, it's like, what, you know, how far do those decimals go into? What's pi time?
Oh, so you'd have to like convert the decimals into an actual like minute and second,
like time. Yeah. Hour, minute, time. Yeah, like, sure. I guess. I think it is 3.14159, so you can make it 1:59 in the afternoon or morning, or 15. I guess 15:09 wouldn't work in military time because 9 is.
There we go.
Not part of the hour.
I have a fun game. I am going to plug 1.34 into Excel, and then turn it into a date and time and see what it gives me.
There you go. I was going to say whatever that Pacific time is, that's the time you gotta. Start whatever drug you're doing. That's the way. That's how you enter to a new multiverse. Is, you know, you drop it exactly that time.
I'll just say for our future robot overlords, hopefully when you type in 3.14 into Excel in the future, they send you pizza or like a pie. They just know right away.
They know what's up.
By the way, this is not very cool. It was January 2nd, 1900 at 3:21. AM in 36 seconds. That was what 3.14 was in Excel.
Well, that's something. That mathematician using Excel over there is John Anderson, in the Denver metro area. What's up?
Data scientist. I don't do math. I have Excel do math for me.
That's how that works. Those are the facts. Also with us, of course, John Kelly, also the Denver metro area. What's up?
Can I make a difference? I don't know.
That's what we're going to talk about today.
But a great song title. Hey, have you guys been catching Jon Stewart's Daily Show startup?
I haven't been. He's doing it like once a week, right? Or something like that?
Yeah, I think he's doing Mondays, I want to say. I saw him roast Tucker Carlson. Jordan sent it to me.
Pretty solid.
It was good. It was vintage Jon Stewart. So. Yeah.
Yep. The one from this week was, you know, Republicans, you can love Trump all you want, buy the sneakers, go to his rallies, but don't fucking call it patriotism. And the next time you go, wear the right fucking color coat, and he shows like a bunch of red coats. He's like, because that's a monarchy shit, what he's talking about.
Yes.
I mean, spoiler alert for, you know, later on in the podcast, but yeah, I mean, I think that's literally the stakes of this election. So it's the American Revolution is at stake. Speaking of red coats. So
yeah. That's real. Well, if it wasn't clear already, and if you for some reason didn't listen to our last podcast, that is what we are here to talk about today, is the US election and all the factors that will be a part of that. It is now official that Trump and Biden are the respective nominees, or I think it's all but certain with Trump. Is it official? I know it's official with Biden.
It's official, yeah. The only like slight, maybe little asterisk I would put on that is some people have pitched a brokered convention for the Democrats. Yeah. I absolutely don't think that will happen, especially after Biden's State of the Union address, but that is like... Yeah. In the universe of discussion.
Yeah.
But I think it's incredibly improbable.
Yeah. That would be wild. That would be cool.
Some like old school, like 19th century shit. It would be crazy.
Yeah. But you know, anything's possible. Put it on your bingo board. And true. in the most recent polls, Trump has a slight favorite. Of course, those polls, especially with that close of a margin, don't necessarily mean much, and especially this far out. But that's kind of where we are.
Yeah. Nationally, it's there. More concerning is that he's leading in some of the swing states.
I think all of them.
A little bit. Yeah, and a larger amount than the national poll in some of them.
Right.
Which is more concerning. It's still too far out to make a call, right, on whether or not that's gonna be
it's early
brought to and November.
I don't know. It's hard to know because on one hand, Trump is kind of running as an incumbent, which I think we talked about last time. But on the other hand, like, clearly people forgot how fucking crazy that time was. And I'm, you know, like, that's not necessarily, some people liked the crazy, but I think most people did, especially people like who are going to swing the election didn't. And I think as they tune back in, because I think many of them have not fully like tuned into the election. I think as they tune back in and they're like, well, yeah, that shit was fucking crazy. Do I really want to do that again? Yeah. And so I do kind of expect to see that happen. Obviously, like, the people in the right-wing media ecosystem are just not going to change, I think, and we're not really gonna, that's just a, you know, it is what it is. But there's a small segment, especially in swing states, of people who I think are persuadable, and I think that the chaos will come back into focus.
Yep. Let's see what happened with let's see what happens with suburban women, independents,
college
more moderate
educated.
More moderate leading Republicans, people who are Nikki Haley supporters, right? We don't quite know what's gonna happen with those votes. So it's out there, but you know, the other thing is that there's still a lot to happen both domestically and internationally over the next 6 months that could change some people's minds. And I think that's, you know, a little list we prepared for this evening. We'll go through those kind of topics that we think will be at the forefront.
I'm well prepared. It's the best prepared we've been for a pod in a minute. We have a list.
Outlines. Let's go, baby. So yeah, I think, you know, I'm not like, I am concerned, but I am definitely not hitting the full panic button like I think a lot of other people on the quote unquote left are, because it's just gonna be such a shit show in the next while that I'm like, we literally don't know. And so worrying about it right now is,
it's gonna be one of the worst and craziest campaign seasons of all time.
It's gonna be terrible.
Between the hate that is thrown across the aisle, with Trump being tried in four trials, and still on the campaign trail, everybody talking about the future of democracy the entire time. It's gonna be wild.
Yeah, and the trials, I think, are gonna be like a very, very interesting component of this, because you know, there's the concept of a set piece, which comes from like military combat. At least that's how I know it in the original context. But in the election context, a set piece event would be like the conventions. Basically, it's like a thing that you can predict and plan for, and so you can create strategies around it, as opposed to like surprises and things like that. And it's interesting that Trump's trials have become a set piece of this election, where like we know trial dates and we know he's not going to be able to have a rally in Michigan because he's got to go to fucking New York to have a hearing or whatever. And so and how that influences the campaign, I think, is going to be really interesting. And there also is a not insignificant block of Republicans who I think will be swayed if he is convicted. I think that will make a slight but significant and possibly decisive difference in this election if he is convicted or not.
Oh, totally. It's proven in multiple polls throughout the country that there's a not insignificant amount of people waiting to see what happens there before they pass final judgment on whether he's fit for office, right? And so they're not even getting into whether his politics are where they want to be, just whether or not he should be allowed to run in general. Which makes the delay tactics that he uses in all of his trials a benefit to him, because the longer he can lay it out, the less likely it is that there's a conviction during the election season, the less likely those people get swayed. They just get disillusioned by the system, right? The legal system more.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. That's going to be a quite a big thing to, that's just like, unfolding, and we'll probably throw wrenches, you know, right and left.
How do you do gag orders like they've been trying to impose on some of the beginning of these trials when it's not the height of campaign season, right? Legally, it's a very gray area that is not totally decided and kind of completely new territory here.
And Trump has proven himself to not follow them very well. Like, he just had to put up $91 million for the E. Jean Carroll defamation lawsuit. Right. And it looks like he might have defamed her again.
Right,
he might also be up for a third getting sued from her. Right. So
you can't make it up. It's so ridiculous.
It's wild. And also, by the way, that $91 million came from somewhere. Like, that wasn't from him directly. And so that is money that he is now like, this is why, going all the way back to 2016, where it was like, it's a bad idea to have this person so heavily invested in his businesses and president of the United States, because he cannot represent the people when he needs to take care of his business. So on all of the steroids.
Yeah. He's going to need to sell about 700 billion pairs of gold-plated sneakers. Right.
Yeah, that's right.
Quote unquote gold-plated.
Yeah, quote unquote. Well, and you know, that aspect and you know, how much media coverage and such that gets his misogyny, you know, I think dovetails also with abortion and Kelly, you mentioned suburban women and suburban white women specifically, right? On how they're gonna vote. And the abortion topic's a big one, right? And Trump historically was like, that's fine, mostly because of Ivanka, it seemed like. But the Republican Party obviously is taking hard stances against abortion access. So that seems to be a player, certainly. And I
think it is not well understood what the electoral impact of this is going to be, because, you know, like, you see in really, really conservative states, I think Nebraska enshrined abortion protection in the last year or two into their constitution. Ohio did recently as well, I believe. And so you see states that are pretty conservative or drifting more conservative, having ballot measures that are supported in those states by decent margins. And so how does that influence the election? You know, like, if we can get
other states overturned, right? It was not passed in Kansas, right? And so I agree. Yes. Continue.
So I wonder if there's an inverse analogy to what Republicans did in 2004 with same-sex marriage ballot initiatives, where they put those ballot initiatives on as a turnout mechanism in the presidential election. And you could see something similar on the left. And so I'm very interested to see if we'll what that impact is going to be.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. And I mean, there is the question around the Democratic Party unity. And that could potentially help, you know, with that, in terms of at least the turnout and checking the box for Biden. And, you know, among that, of course, is the Democratic Party's stance on Gaza and the genocide in Gaza and their staunch support for Israel. However, that is shifting. I don't feel salt to say that Chuck Schumer came out and said that there needs to be, like, Netanyahu shouldn't, yeah, an election that Netanyahu mm-hmm. should yeah. not be in power anymore, which is by yeah. far the strongest thing that we have heard coming out of Democratic leadership so far.
Which I totally agree with. The Israeli government has been taken over by an extreme right-wing
party.
And this is one of the consequences of having a right-wing takeover of a powerful country. So, and I think that very strictly politically speaking, the Democrats are in a really difficult position with Israel. They basically lose either way. Either, you know, you see like what has been happening with the Muslim population in Minnesota and Michigan. Yeah. That's a real problem. But on the other hand, how do you win Florida without a strong Jewish vote? And so I think that Gaza in particular is a really sticky situation for Democrats. And it also is a pretty uniting issue for Republicans. And the nice thing about Republicans is they don't have to own any outcome. The Democrats have to completely own the outcome because of who the president is. So it's a really bad electoral, you know, like aside from the morality and the strategic implications of it and all of that, it is just it's a really bad political item for the Democrats.
Yeah. And, you know, another international relations thing that does have to be owned, I would say probably by both parties, is, you know, Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the ongoing war there, given that there are right-wing politicians, including Trump himself, who, you know, have cozied up to Putin. The question of like how that's going to play out. Now, you know, to be fair, I don't know how nuanced Republican voters are around that. For example, I have driven through parts of the country where there are literally MAGA flags and Ukraine flags flying next to each other. And I'm like,
breaks my brain.
Dude, it was multiple times too. Like, it's not just once. It was like, man, I was like, oh my fucking God. Like, those two things cannot go. They're mutually exclusive, man. Yeah.
It's almost like having a US flag and a Confederate flag together.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It is almost like,
cognitive dissonance in a symbol.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I think the war in Ukraine is a little bit better of a point for Democrats, and I think they'll hit it a little harder more often because of Trump's stance and his anti-NATO stance in terms of pulling U.S. funding there. And also the just shit show that's been around trying to fund Ukraine from Congress. I mean, the obstruction that House Republicans have pulled on any measure that is meant for international aid there, militarily and humanitarian, is ridiculous. So I think that plays a little bit better into the Democrats' hands on the campaign trail.
I agree. We'll see it think, though, just generally speaking, it's going to have less impact electorally.
I agree with
people,
that too.
Like, just generally have less of a feeling about it.
People care more about Israel, about that conflict, I think, and they care more about stuff like the economy and immigration than they do about the war in 100%. Ukraine.
I do think, though, side note, the war in Ukraine has more of a geostrategic impact on the world, that outcome. And so per usual, U.S. Electoral politics do not match the importance of certain issues, unfortunately.
I mean, of course, the caveat being that if the war in Palestine, Israel expands, like, you know, to Hezbollah, right, whatever, like, and
if
I think
Iran gets involved,
mm-hmm. And then I think also on the Ukraine side, the thing that will, I think for me, the thing to watch is that with like dwindling aid support to Ukraine, like if that leads to, like, I was just reading an article about it today, so I, you know, things could change obviously, but like right now there's dwindling support happening. They really need that. I mean, they need the arms, everything, to be keeping Russia at bay. Russians that has been has some significant gains recently in the war, so it's kind of like depending on how that goes. And then with, you know, folks like Macron saying that like boots on the ground is not out of the realm of possibility, it's like if we have allies even with boots on the ground in another country, like I think that could bring it more into focus. But like I agree, at this point it seems like less of a less of a point.
You know, and how emboldened does Vladimir Putin get? I mean,
yeah,
it's very close to being invading NATO countries, depending on some bombing things that happen on the northern border of Ukraine. I mean, all of a sudden you have boots on the ground from NATO, and then it is a much bigger deal. So, I'm with you there. It's very concerning. Again, I agree with John, and I think we might have lost him, but hopefully he'll come back to us. And it won't be as focused on, at least in the short term at the start of the race, I think. Because domestic issues usually dominate the conversation around a presidential election, especially at the beginning of the campaign season. Classically, you don't get a lot of international relation debates and where president stands for international stuff until it's actually closer to the election when the debates start. You know, I don't think we want to get into the whole potential shit show debate might be if Trump would even show up. But that's kind of where I think a lot of international relations, the international scene ends up getting brought up. So, you know, maybe we can run through the last couple domestic issues. Totally. That we had on our list.
I think it's a good call. I think it's a good transition there. And yeah, I mean, the debates, that's a whole issue if that'll even happen. And God, those are always wild. But I do think so. I mean, you had mentioned, obviously, like the economy. The economy's in a relatively okay place right now. It's like very bullish right now, but that is not predicted necessarily to continue the rest of the year. But it's, you know, it's predicted that it will be a relatively stable economy, so you know that bodes well, obviously, for the Democrats.
It's such a wild combination that's happening right now, because when you look at economic metrics almost across the board, they are better than they were under Trump. They're better than they were during COVID, but a lot of people, and this is on both sides, both Democrats and Republicans, and a high percentage of independents, think they're worse off. They look at it and say that the economy is putting them in a worse position than they have been. And the metrics don't really show that, which is, I think, a larger symptom of just unease and discomfort with capitalism in this country, and generally with the wealth disparity that is currently being seen in this country. And so even though more Americans are better off than they were, and wages are catching up with inflation again, and more people are being hired and getting hired for better paying jobs, it doesn't feel that way. And a lot of people look at it and say no. And so I think that actually favors Republicans a little bit more, because they're the incumbents. They can point to Joe Biden and say, all of your feelings about this economy are correct, even though the metrics don't point to it. And our business first, cut spending, cut taxes type of government is the way to re-kick the economy better for everyone else. I mean, it's the classic trickle down argument that they will run on, but I think that will capture quite a few people in the middle that have some pretty big discomfort with the economic matrix. So we'll see.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. And I mean, you know, not that it's true, but Trump, you know, bills himself as a business, as a successful business person. And so, yeah,
it captures the minds of a lot of voters. It's amazing how many people still hear go, well, that's the reason he should be president, because he runs successful companies. And if the government was run more like that, we'd be more successful.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. And I mean, another domestic issue, immigration, you know, and I mean, the Republicans have already been whipping that up. Now, they've had some pretty clownish moments recently, like busing in a bunch of people to who they thought they were going to see, like a bunch of like gang members with machine guns crossing the borders, and then of course they see women and children. You know, they're already on that path of drumming up all of that all that racism, all that good old-fashioned racism.
The scare tactics and racism are strong. Totally agree, man. It's interesting. I want to make 2 points here. The first one being that, again, the House Republicans' obstructionist attitudes in the last couple months, where there were real policy that was put forward by both parties agreeing in the Senate with somehow support to really fix pieces of the immigration system.
Right.
Fix how long it takes to do asylum papers.
Right.
Put more guards along the border. Put more money towards deportations, right? And faster papers and trials and all that stuff. And the Republicans in the House completely tanked it because they won't accept anything except for a quote-unquote closed border in the South, which is the Trump policy there. And to this point, it hasn't backfired. It makes them look better because the situation continues to get worse, both humanitarianly and along the border, and they will continue to benefit from that. However,
manufacture a crisis and then be like, look, there's a crisis
that we made.
And
honestly, you know, I didn't agree with a large part of that bipartisan deal, but at least there was movement. I thought that the Democrats gave way more than what they should be required to give in good faith dealing with another party. But because the House Republicans were so staunch that they didn't want to move, there was absolutely no budging on it. And, you know, it really is sad. That's a clear piece of playing politics before people's lives, both American and international lives from other countries, either people that are crossing illegally or for legitimate asylum seekers. It's terrible. But the other point that I wanted to make about the whole immigration thing, and this is something that I just thought about this morning listening to CPR, there's, you know, in the echo chambers on the right talking about the stolen election in 2020, in 2021, and the idea that one of the main reasons it was stolen is because the Democrats are, one, either allowing people into the country, or two, illegally allowing them to vote, both of which are unsubstantiated claims completely. But I wonder if Democrats will pick it up and go, well, you know, one, we're not registering them to vote. But if they are illegals and they are voting in some of these places, it's because you Republicans bust them here from your other states.
Right. Yeah.
That will be a piece that will be discussed over and over again throughout, trying to lead us to our next point, which is just election integrity in general.
Election integrity, right, and just the state of our of our election system, you know. The state, like, just the things happening in the state, which, you know, has been amplified since the last election, right? Getting the election, you know, the certifiers on board, right? Like all of that stuff of kind of trying to pack those procedural, which were supposed to be procedural roles, with people who are sympathetic basically to fascism, right? But overturning, you know, like, Democratic elections for the sake of Trump, basically.
Yeah.
And so we have all that to deal with.
And you know, really monitoring what's going to happen in a lot of states where more restrictive voting laws were put into place right afterwards, right?
Yeah.
In-person voting rather than mail-in voting. ID forward laws where you have to show ID when you vote,
right.
Other papers, identification papers when you vote. Laws like they enacted in Georgia that says you're not allowed to feed people that are standing in line waiting to vote because you know, you could influence them or whatever they were saying. You know, stuff like that makes it a lot more difficult. If you want to have a real democracy, even a representative democracy like we have, the idea is you want more voices.
Yeah.
Right. You want a more open society with more voices. Allowing more people to vote and making it easier to vote allows that to happen. You know, it's from a political science standpoint, it's very interesting because for all the drumming up that Republicans do about voting in person and not wanting immigrants or illegals potentially to vote, a solid chunk of first generation migrants that come to this country vote Republican because they're usually the most conservative from their countries. They're fleeing war zones. They are smart, well-educated people that see the American dream, and they come here and they see the Republican standpoint and their rhetoric and think they're more connected to it, right? These are first-generation Catholic immigrants from Central America.
Yeah. Right? So like, socially, they're conservative in terms of abortion, right?
Very conservative, absolutely.
Yeah.
And they fit well with the Republican Party. And, I'd love to see analysis to show the potential of votes that the Republicans might be losing with some of their more stricter voting laws around the country.
Yeah.
Don't know if we'll see it until after the election happens, but
thing
to keep your eye on.
But that's going to be in the mix. Yeah, for sure. And, along with, going down, what else is going on? Obviously, there can be foreign interference, like there was from Russia in the last election. We'll see how that goes. And then on that
line, there's interference potentially too.
Right. Yep. And related to that related to the technology impact, right? Because we don't know, but the House just passed this TikTok ban. It's not a complete ban. It's basically either ByteDance, the company that owns it, has to sell it, or it's going to get banned in the US now. It's not sure if it's going to make it through the Senate. But it was pretty bipartisan. Like pretty much everybody voted for it going through.
Yeah. 80 something percent. You've never seen the House vote 80% of anything.
Yeah. Which is wild. Now, I think there's a couple things on this. I think it's like, all right, certain people are seeing the writing on the wall, like they have with all other information platforms or other media, social media platforms, that it's too open. And they've seen this because of the genocide in Gaza. Because circumnavigating all of the media propaganda are just individual humans posting onto the platform what's happening right to them. And you can't really argue with that, So you have that. They don't want stuff like that. And then, we don't really know how the algorithm works, right? And the TikTok, because it's in China, does not play by the rules of US law in terms of companies like Meta or Twitter. It will forever be Twitter, not X. Those companies are, because they're located, their headquarters are located in the United States, they're beholden to US law. Now, obviously other companies can also be beholden to US law, but then when you have it in China, another, we can say at this point, another world superpower, it's like whose laws are gonna win out, right? In this. And sure from the beginning, TikTok has not been following the laws around the US laws around data scraping. Like they just scrape freely to anywhere, right? And so there are those things. I think the real question is how could the Chinese government use a platform like TikTok to sway the election? Now, obviously, deep fakes, AI stuff for sure. I haven't heard of actually any evidence of that happening, but of course, TikTok has only been as big as it had. It wasn't as big as it was back in the 2020 election. So this is really the test of that.
Right. Yeah, I think the more likely outcome if the Chinese government was going to use something is less deep fakes and more change the algorithm to fit destabilizing messages.
Right.
In the United States, right?
Because that's what Russia did, right?
That's exactly what Russia did.
They didn't.
You scrape it off. You see what people, right? You give the information in the parent company that runs TikTok that has government connections. You filter that into the government ministries of information. Allow them to come up with a plan of how to use that to say, oh, well, these chunks of the population in the United States seem to be more susceptible to conspiracy theories about chemtrails or flat earth or whatever. And we know also that they are probably Republican voters. We can try to destabilize it, right? Something like that. What they want is chaos. They want the system to be chaos, usually, if you're talking about subversion and propaganda. So that's probably more likely. But yeah, I don't really use TikTok, so I don't really care as much. But I do understand that this is one of the major pieces of how international law and governance works. If you have two systems that are considered to be basically butting heads legally, right? Yeah. But you have an insidious piece of a platform that is a major part of your citizens' everyday life that is controlled by another government. It raises questions about sovereignty, citizenship, all that kind of stuff. So it's fascinating. I think it probably will pass the Senate. We'll see if TikTok decides to sell that piece of their company.
It will be interesting, and I mean, I think that it's going to have repercussions more obviously for Gen Z voters. I mean, they're obviously the most who are on TikTok, and you know, will be pissed about it. So it's like, we shall see about that. And there's obviously other I mean, like, you know, talking the U.S. third party impacts. You know, like, I know someone who's planning to vote for Cornel West, who's running into the Peace and Freedom Party. You know, like, now that's in California, so like, is that really going to have an impact? Probably not. But you know,
with
it's
the
like,
Electoral College, your vote in California for the third party probably means less of a risk of a Trump presidency than it would in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Florida, Georgia.
Exactly. But there's always that. There's always, you know, those people like, will, you know, would someone like Nikki Haley run? It could be on the other side, you know, splitting votes for Trump. We don't fully know yet.
When she conceded her. Now you got to go out and prove the votes, you know, get the votes from the Republicans that voted for me type of thing. Rang pretty shallow to me.
She'll fall
in line.
I'm sure she will.
She had many, many interviews throughout the primary time and process where she was like, you know, Republicans will still be Republicans at the end of the day. And I'll still support the Republican nomination because that's who the people in our party voted for, which means Trump.
Yeah,
She's not going to tear it up. But I do hear what you're saying.
Yeah, it's just like third party in general. I mean, you know, there's also questions around the Supreme Court. I mean, one, will they need to get involved? I mean, they already have in terms of the Trump being on the ballot in Colorado.
Still going to hear his immunity case about whether or not he has presidential immunity to be charged while he's in office. That's the big one.
Yeah. And it's also always like, you know, who's going to retire, questions, all of that. Also, who's Trump's VP pick going to be, which could matter. Or could not matter at all, depending on who he picks. Like, if he picks someone, like, completely out of left field that's just, like, fucking insane or something, like, maybe he'll be like, okay. But if he just picks some, like, milquetoast person again, it's not going to probably have any impact because, you know.
Yeah. Probably not someone like Mike Pence again would be my
probably
guess.
Not. Yeah, I'm sure it'll be more of someone in the Trump camp than Mike Pence was because I don't think.
I think John said Jim Jordan last week when we talked, and the more I thought about it, the more I liked that potential pick.
In terms of the
politics behind it.
And then, of course, there's just a lot of unknowns that we don't like what's going to unfold, as there always is. World events, domestic events, you know, things will occur that will probably impact the election. And we, dear listeners, will be here to update you on
how many podcasts will Ameripod have? Will John Anderson ever come back and speak to your good ears again? We don't know, but we will sure endeavor to find out. Godspeed.
Had to do it.
Oh man, so good. And you know, just as a closing here, go out and listen to Suffer. You know, if you haven't, go out and give the whole album a listen. You know, the rage from Reagan era punk is still alive.
It really is. It's still informing us. I'm going to listen to that vinyl you gave me. Hell yeah.
Boom. Now we're talking.